Ladies and gentlemen, what is up? Welcome to another episode of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat. This is episode 32 on February 28th, 2012. In Control has disappeared. And Idra has even disappeared. But in Idra's place, we've got the Muslim. And I'm very excited to have him on the show tonight because I think he played probably my favorite series at MLG Winter Arena, Nesty versus the Muslim. It was completely epic. What's up, dude? Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thank you, man. And it's going pretty well. I'm just a little tired, but just got back yesterday, probably like you. So doing pretty good.
Awesome. And Pain User, what is up, man? It's been a week or so. How's it going?
Well, I'm just all caught up on my Aces ROG. I haven't caught the MLG games yet. Probably going to have to wait till next Monday to catch up on all those replays. But other than that...
There's a lot, man. Like, GSL Finals is right around the corner,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
And I've still got to catch up on all those games leading up to it. So, I mean, there is a hell of a lot of content this weekend as far as StarCraft 2 is concerned.
Indeed. I went rock climbing with the family for the first time this weekend in a very long time. It was awesome.
Wait. You mean mountain climbing, right?
I do both. Backpacking and rock climbing are two pretty different things, though.
I just mean a man of your size probably couldn't find a rock to climb, but you'd have to just do a mountain, right?
I'm pretty flexible, and most of climbing is with your legs anyway, so my upper body's actually...
the physics of the joke going right over your head.
I mean, it's a little ridiculous. Yeah, I know. It's kind of ridiculous. But it was a good time.
In Control.
Hey.
Welcome back, man. We thought
Thank you. You
got hit with a shrink ray or something, and we couldn't... You just disappeared.
No. No, honey, I shrunk the kids on this one.
No. I saw you tweeting throughout the weekend. Know that you were... Enjoying games. How is that? You know, you've been to so many events lately and you usually you're there. And like I was kind of explaining to some of the guys this weekend about Barcrass when I missed MLG Raleigh last year. It was awesome to actually get to experience it that way before. How was it for you this weekend? Too much consumption or what?
It was cool in the sense that like it's definitely a different experience to sit there, and we'll talk all about it, I'm sure, but like the MLG player allows you to have two or three streams up, so I was watching different games. It was really cool, and I liked it, but I'm kind of spoiled. I usually go to every event, so to sit at home and have to watch felt very powerless. I was very like, I was like, I want to be there. You know, I want to play.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Like, we had so much... It was also cool as an EG guy, because... We had JYP and Puma at ROG, and then we had Ben, Chris, and Greg in New York. And to see two separate events, different parts of the world, EG playing, was a treat for me. So, pretty happy.
As you mentioned, like having that many EG players at an event, like that had to be sort of from a team morale point of view, pretty freaking awesome. I mean, probably even better if you were a top three both, but you know. Realistically.
We did top three both. Thank you very much.
You mean
be at both? What'd you say?
What? Oh, yeah, be at both.
Oh, because we had Huck in top three at MLG, and then we had...
I meant 1, 2, 3, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I don't know. No, that's my joke, Weed.
Man, I'm going to take... If you use it here, I'm going to take it in Control. Anyway, it's nice to be back. I do have to tell you guys that after this weekend, I was like, oh shit, man, it's here. Like the downtime has been, it's been really nice, you know, like, oh, you know, but then busting an ass for a weekend, it's like, okay, yeah, we're about to do like 6, 7, possibly 8 solid months of this. And that's going to be great overall. I honestly can't wait. Sort of a glutton for punishment. So definitely looking forward to that. So tonight on the show, we're going to open up the phone lines for you. Got a couple things from the mailbag. When we talk about MLG Winter Arena, you know, one of the things I definitely want to do in sort of an inside the game fashion is have the Muslim talk a little bit and maybe even take some questions from the chat regarding his game, Nesty versus the Muslim, and talk just a little bit about that as well. Talk about the event overall and then ACES as well. So in regards to training and learning and actually pain user and even in control, and I have mentioned a few times, like trying to take some more direction towards like the learning and the training of the game, you know, because we do talk a lot about events. But it's not very often that we are really, really, really diving into different stuff. And so it's something we want to do more. And I am involved with the new project, and I'm going to bring actually Day 9. You happen to all know him on the show here briefly to talk a little bit about Red Bull Land Orlando, which is taking place before MLG Winter Championship that is, I believe, in like 23 days, which doesn't seem that far away, actually. And the Muslim, you will be there in control. You will be there, pain user. Is that something maybe you know you've expressed maybe wanting to play a little bit more? Could we possibly see you there as well?
Maybe. I mean, I've been playing more recently, smurfing, of course, but I've still got it. So
where,
I don't know.
Where are we going?
MLG Winter Championships.
You said I was there.
Are you not going to it?
Oh, right. Championships is Columbus.
Man, we're just not on the same wavelength today in control. Usually, like, I put on blue socks, I see you with blue socks on. You know, like, there's just the connect. Today, the connection's not there.
I didn't want to be the only guy that didn't understand things.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got
today
you.
I just take everyone literally. That's my problem. I just take you literally at first. I just assume 50% of the time that it's you're poking fun at me or someone.
Well, I'm bringing him on right now. As we of course. Sorry, that's so loud, you guys. I don't think this man needs any introduction, Sean Dana. I'm sorry, it's probably still so loud to you, isn't it?
No, it's really good now.
Oh, shut up, is it? Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Dude, it is going delightfully. How's everything on Inside the Game going for like the first 10 minutes of the broadcast?
Well, aside from the random blue screen that came out of nowhere, and of course, since all you guys stream, and of course, since you stream, Sean, you know well aware, you're well aware of that sort of thing. So
totally. I had a blue screen last week, completely incapacitated the computer. I had to reformat and everything.
They're not fun, especially when it literally happens 30 seconds before you are about to go on air. But anyway, so we are a little bit behind. My apologies to you, sir. And I was just talking a little bit about what we were having you on for, the Red Bull Land Orlando. And, you know, I'd definitely just fire off with like an overview for us.
Yeah, so the whole idea behind the Red Bull Land Orlando, for any of you who are unfamiliar with the general theme of the Red Bull Lands, Red Bull is well known for taking, I guess I'd say, like some marginalized activities and really sort of elevating the entire level of discourse around all. You know, like, for instance, with extreme sports or, you know, with like snowboarding, a lot of winter sports, Red Bull has really taken those very seriously and has kind of helped catapult them up. So the whole idea is to do that with StarCraft as well. The Red Bull LAN is not a tournament per se. It's not where players are going to be competing for a big prize. It's instead a training LAN. And the goal is for a whole bunch of players from different teams, different locations, different continents, all to come into one place and just have a whole bunch of fun training. The last Red Bull LAN had 12 players at it. It was held in Santa Monica. I would say that the one struggle that the LAN experienced the LAN experience had was that it was kind of it was difficult to actually get any one player in particular to sort of be on the stage for a good period of time. So the idea with the new Red Bull LAN in Orlando is that we're again bringing out 12 players, but four players are going to be the focus players, and the LAN is going to be focused on them and their improvement. And two focus players have been announced thus far. It's one of them is Liquid Chef. And another one is Thorzane from Mouse Sports. So on Friday and Saturday, almost all of the content that you'll be seeing at home will be focused on these players. Who are they? Where are they from? What are problems with their practice? And, of course, a lot of games of them practicing. And because it's not as useful just for them to play a lot of games, there will be like a structured training regimen there. So each player will have like a challenge that he's trying to work on. And this is customized player to player. So, you know, like I sit down with one of the focus players and say, what's a problem that you're having a lot? And let's say the player says, my late game is really good if I can get there. I have this great play. So what I want to practice is being anti-cheese. So I'd say, okay, sweet. And then I'd go to the other 11 players at the LAN, and I'd have them arrange one and two base all-ins. And then for a 90-minute period, that player would be up against all whole varieties of one and two base all-ins, trying to hold them off to, again, get to that end game. Sunday will conclude with a mini tournament, and the focus of this is, of course, to get the chance to actually practice in that competitive tournament environment. And that's pretty much a summary recap of the whole weekend. The players will be practicing pretty much all day, but the broadcast will be in the evening for about 6 hours each evening.
And so as far as the challenge is concerned, you've already sort of identified with the focus players kind of what they're, you know, or how's that going to work exactly?
Yeah, the way it works is that I just sit down and talk to them about what are some problems that you're having with your gameplay. And it's not supposed to be like... it's not supposed to be that they show up and have no clue how to solve a problem and we have 90 minutes for them to figure it out, because StarCraft doesn't exactly work that way.
Right.
You know, instead it would be one of these like, okay, you know, again, let's say Chef is struggling with one and two base all-ins. I'd sit down, I'd talk with him, and he would say, okay, so I have some ideas that I think are going to be what solves it. I practice against a lot of them, and now it's the challenge that we end up seeing at the LAN. So theoretically, for the week or two leading up, he'll obviously be doing training for, you know, the MLG the next weekend, for the other tournaments he's going to be in, but he's going to be aware that he will be put to the test on this specific task.
Okay.
So it won't be a surprise for him. He'll know exactly what it is he's preparing for, and then he'll try to break that. It'd be the equivalence of like having a runner and a weightlifter, and we create a challenge for each of them. They're individualized, sure, specifically what they're working on.
Sure. So you mentioned the focus players. And there's going to be four total, and two have been announced. But the sort of training players as well, they are not necessarily like just some guys off the street that people are going to be beating up on all weekend. Do you want to talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, right now Startail Parting is one of the players who's been announced, and Quantic Naniwa are the two team players who've been announced. And let me actually just take a brief moment to pretend that there's no broadcast at all, that you're not going to see anything there. One of the big goals of this event was to coordinate with the teams and the players to find out who are the people who want to be going to that upcoming MLG event and who really want that new practice environment. So there's going to be several Koreans there who have yet to be announced. And, of course, Parting and Naniwa would, you know, Naniwa lives in the Startail house training with them. So, you know, they do get a good chance to overlap. But Chef and Thorzane may not have a chance to play with Parting at all. So it's a chance to have that big mesh of styles going on there. So again, pretending that there's no broadcast, each of these players is going to be showing up to this LAN with a whole set of strategies they want to practice against a whole new set of players, which I think is a great thing right before a LAN. Right before a major event.
Right.
Because it's where you actually get to stress test. Because that, I will say, I mean, I'm sure as a lot of the EG folk know, that, you know, when you have this house where you're playing in it all the time with the same people again and again and again, there's some strategies that will just happen more commonly in your direct vicinity. And it might not be common outside of your house at all. So it's a great chance when you go get practice partners outside of your main circle just for that variety. So that's what a lot of the training players are there to do, specifically just to train. And, of course, they'll definitely be helping the focus players with their challenges. And they get to play in the mini tournament at the end for money. Yeah.
So it takes place the week before MLG Winter Championship, right? So most of these, if not all of them, will be heading over. And with only two of the training players announced, so when do you think we might be hearing some more names? And also with the practice partners.
Oh, you sly dog, DJ. I do believe that tomorrow there will be an announcement of two EG players on your show live on 3. About who will be able to attend the event. So they will be two training players for this event, and I'm very excited that both of those will be announced then.
All right. All right. That'll be tomorrow night on Live on 3 here on One More Game. This is, you know, one thing, because we talk about the training house a lot here, Jeff, and I'd kind of take this to you, because one of the things that you've been doing a lot of is, you know, the sort of the EG practice, and some of the scrimming stuff that you've been doing, Jeff. You know, just, from your point of view, this is not necessarily experience that some of these players necessarily do get the chance to do. How do you, you know, what do you think about these types of experiences? The ability to get together, you know, these boot camps.
I think that's something that's been kind of missing from StarCraft II. Like, a lot of people, I mean, well, widespread StarCraft II. Like, there's such a huge difference between just playing the games and playing the games with people that are as good or better than you, or around your skill level, and then talking about it. That's such a huge element that's missing. Like, I can sit down and I could play 10 games with a Muslim, and that'd be fantastic. Obviously, we'd both benefit and be really good. But if we're also talking on Skype about the pros, the cons, we're arguing. I mean, that's actually an important thing. Like, you shouldn't agree with everything everybody says, obviously. A lot of times the conjecture, the disagreement solidifies our standpoints and brings new ones. It changes opinions. It gets us to do different things than we would have done reluctantly in our head if we were by ourselves. So talking about those games and spending time working through each other's gameplay is just so tremendously awesome. I mean, that's something I'm really anticipating for this weekend, because kind of the interesting component here is these guys aren't all on the same team. So on the one hand, it's pretty fantastic that they – I mean, it's going to be interesting to see who's so willing to help out somebody else and who's there who's like, yeah, dude, you should totally do that one thing on that map. You know, like – I'll be interested to see if Naniwa is really interested in helping Chef with his PVZ. You know, I hate to be the, don't call me the hater or the doubter. I'm just saying, like, that's an interesting component for this tournament, is does that actually shine through? And I'll tell you what, for everyone who's going to be tuning in, and there'll be thousands of people, I'm really hoping that the spirit of improving each other's gameplay does shine through there, and the people that really embrace it are rewarded for it by the fan base, because I think that's something that's really valuable. When we talk about new players on EG, a lot of the time, one of the components we talk about potential new players is, are they a team player? Would they help the people around them? Because if they do, that adds value to the entire organization, not just by them winning games, but by them making everyone better.
That's a great point, sir. And
yeah,
go ahead.
I want to briefly jump in on that, Jeff, because I think that is, like, so critical about these kinds of events, that... Again, for this event, the whole structure of it, and Red Bull was really kind enough to really let Day 9 TV sort of handle all, like, the production organization of it. And, like, one of the big ideas was this should be focused on the training first and the broadcast second. It shouldn't just be like a show where we pit players against each other and say, ha-ha, we got good content out of it. And as a result, I mean, one of the big things that we want to take into account is, of course, like, the team player element. Are these people going to be there to help each other out? In the first Red Bull LAN, it was actually amazing to see how incredibly helpful some of these players were who were in the same group with each other at the upcoming MLG, to be helping each other out and sparring against each other. And, of course, all the teams and the players are aware that this is going to be a big collaborative training event. And if there is a player who would be a little more hesitant to sort of share that strategy, that's totally okay. And if they didn't want to attend the event because of some sort of risk, that was something that we really valued really highly. And likewise, a lot of players have requested things like, hey, I'm working on this really kind of crazy, cheesy rush build that I want to open with. Could you not stream that? And the answer is, like, absolutely. This is something that, you know, as Jeff said, I think that the StarCraft community has been missing for quite some time. This whole idea of how do you really focus and really train. I mean, EG is very lucky in that they have this great practice environment in the EG house. But if you're a team like Team Liquid, whose roster is basically a guy took a shotgun and blasted it at the world, and wherever there was a hole, they got a player from there, right? Like, how do you get those players in one location and have them actually train? So,
I think as we build towards the future, there'll be more things like this because as tournaments get bigger, because how many times do we hear the discussion around, like, MLG Arena where it's like, well, Dongregu was jet lagged, you know, or wow, it's so cool that they got over that jet lag. Like, I really feel like in the future, these kind of boot camps the week before a major event are really going to pop up, not just for the learning experience, but also to your point, Sean, there's players coming from all over the world. So for an opportunity for a Korean player to come here, get their legs under them, train, and just feel comfortable with the time zone and get comfortable, we're going to see their best games out of those guys. And, totally. And honestly, that's a win for everybody involved. So kudos to Red Bull and their LAN, and kudos to just the spirit of this event, because if it brings players in earlier before these big events, that increases the productivity and the quality of games, and I'm really happy about that.
Absolutely. I wanted to mention also absolutely. And while you do, Pain User, I just wanted to mention I've got that web page up on Team Liquid where you can find out more information about it. Go ahead, Pain User.
It's kind of a question for Sean. You know, you mentioned that the training behind this was going to be the focus, and you mentioned a few different methods that you kind of had set up. Is the methodology of training and how to train also going to be a focus at this LAN? And to expand on that, are you going to be helping set up the actual methodology of how they train? And are people going to be like testing it to see if different methods work more efficiently than other methods, and
kind of learning
how to train at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, one important thing to note is that this is definitely not going to be the only Red Bull LAN out there. And I think that's about all I can say in that regard. But what's interesting about the StarCraft II scene is that there is not a really clearly established methodology. It's not so much that the players don't know it, and all someone needs to do is let them know what it is. I know that there's I was even talking to a player earlier today who was saying that, I actually feel myself improving a lot more if I play half the time and study and analyze half the time. I know players who say, I don't really get any sense of what's going on. I have to play that whole period of time. So what we want to try to do is actually plant down specific methodologies, such as, for instance, this challenge is a very common idea in other sports. Like, it's deliberate practice. I'm not just practicing. I'm practicing this one thing, and I'm measuring the results. And let's say we do this for this LAN, and it's terrible. And the players are like, I actually got worse at holding off all ends after the challenge. Then great. Not only was that a good experience for that player to know, cool, this isn't a way to practice, but also we can show in the broadcast, wow, these players are not actually improving via this method. This is a very interesting thing that a lot of players can maybe learn from to say, this is an area to avoid. So as far as I'm concerned, though, when you have that many players there training and with all the issues that they have to work on, being able to link them up with other people who are working on the sort of complementary issue, it's really awesome. A player who says, I'm really working on Zerg versus Protoss, I don't really know how to hold off these aggressive two-base plays. And there's another player saying, hey, I'm working on a really aggressive two-base play that I'm trying to transition into a third base in the long term. To be able to pair those players up is really cool. So awesome. Hope that ramble answers something.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean, any final comments, any details? I fired up the thread. I'm going to throw that link into chat as well.
Let me just make sure I have the URL correct for anyone who's watching the recording of this video. It's twitch.tv/team/RedBullLAN, all one word. And that will be the collective aggregate of all the streams there. It's also important to note that this LAN is not just going to be StarCraft 2. It also has a Halo component to it. Day 9 TV will be doing the dedicated StarCraft stream, so it will be only StarCraft going on. But something that I think is great that Red Bull's doing is it's not just a focus on one game. It's a focus on the idea of gamers in general. What do competitive gamers need to really improve their play from a training perspective?
What's that, Jeff?
I love that noise.
Jeff? I don't know about that, Wheat.
What?
I don't know about that. Unless the other games are Mario Kart 64, GoldenEye 64, Warhammer, Counter-Strike 1.6, I don't like it.
Those are all solid.
It's awesome. Gaming is awesome.
Love it.
It's good.
Awesome.
Sean, what are you guys going to do about the god-awful weather in Florida, namely the humidity?
You know, that's something we've been talking a lot about, and we're going to tell any player who doesn't want to put up with humidity, we'll just tell them, don't worry, we got that covered. Red Bull has the resources to remove humidity from the entire state for the duration of the event. It will also be held indoors.
That helps a lot. All right, awesome. So we got the team page, got the thread. Anything else, Sean?
Something that is important to me always is feedback from the community. Anything that you would want to see, please let me know at all. Anything you'd want for this land, for the next land, please, like, sky's the limit. Because I know it's easy to be like, well, I would have liked, you know, if we could get, I don't know, this feature, but I can understand it's not really that necessary. Seriously, just post any sort of request you want, because the more we know what people want, the better we can satisfy the fine StarCraft community.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent, sir. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I will see you there, casting by your side. So thank you for the invitation. And we'll be announcing those two guys tomorrow on Live on 3. So thank you.
Peace.
All right. Have a good one, man. Take care.
Later, Sean.
So, wait.
Yes.
You're using Inside the Game to announce that tomorrow on Live on 3 you'll be making a big announcement?
Do you know...
An announcement about
yeah,
an announcement.
I learned from the best, sir. I learned from the best.
I'd like to take this time to just tell people that tonight on State of the Game, I'll be making an announcement that can only be described as 2 or 3, maybe 400 times bigger than the announcement on Live on 3 tomorrow. And 2EG players going to Red Bull Land, big deal.
Everyone,
I'm talking about big stuff here.
Everyone already knows that I'm going to be on State of the Game, Jeff.
Oh, snap.
I'm just playing. What do you guys want to talk about next?
Pain
user's frozen, by the way.
I am?
Yeah. You've been frozen for a while.
The game? Inside the game? I would love to talk about
you
the game.
You want to talk about the
to
game.
Clarify, by the way, I don't know if there is a State of the Game tonight because JP is literally killing esports.
Yeah, JP told me there wasn't.
What a bish.
Yeah.
I'm only like one of the hosts, but whatever.
Yeah. You should just do it, man, I think.
I should.
I think so, man. Just.
What are you doing tonight?
I'm not doing nothing, man. What?
Stay tuned. I might do that.
Okay. You let me know, man. You know how to find me. Let's talk a little bit. Well, Taylor said, yo, I want to talk about, you know, the game a little bit. And, Taylor, you said you got a chance to watch Asus ROG.
Indeed.
And let me make sure I have the right one here. All right, now pain user. Now I'm just going to noodle you, dude. You might have to just quit Skype and reload.
What, we're going to start talking about StarCraft strats?
Yeah. We're going to talk about – I want to hear from you what your favorite thing you saw strategic-wise was out of the Asus ROG.
Oh, God. I saw a couple things that were really cool in the Asus ROG. One thing that we've actually been seeing more lately from Zergs is the little hatch block that I think Lucky used against Mana in – game 2 or 3 on Antigua Shipyard. But basically, long story short, he blocked a Protoss FE behind the choke with a hatchery and completely just outright won the game with a straight-up metagame move like that, where he dropped a hatchery, prevented the Nexus from going up until the two cannons were up at the front of the choke, forced the hatch to eventually go down, but built a bunch of Lings and a Queen and was dropping creep tumors to keep the creep extended for an amount of time that would just delay the Nexus so much that it forced mana into an all-in situation. And I thought that that was particularly awesome. And I didn't catch the MLG games, but it seems similar stuff was going down because I heard a lot about
we'll definitely talk a little bit about MLG because I saw some stuff that I felt like, at least in competition play, I hadn't really been seeing a whole lot. But let's actually go back to the hatch blocking thing.
Straight up won the game with that.
Well, so I have a question because – and In Control, like, jump in here, right? Because, A, as in a fast expand, have you ever had this happen to you? And, B, has it ever been a problem? Because I've seen it be successful. I've also seen it kind of, like, fall on its face. Or not necessarily be too successful other than actually just delaying the Nexus, but never really like, oh, I'm going to get so many units out of this thing before my cannons like blow it all to shit. In control from a Protoss perspective.
Well, there's a couple maps where this works better than others. So one map that has come to mind is Antigua Shipyard. If you try to do a ramp block at the natural, the ramp that leads up into the natural, that is, a lot of times your cannons based on that pylon actually won't even reach the expansion area. So that map can be really problematic. That's a big part of the reason why we see a lot more Koreans doing the wall in closer to where the Nexus is. Of course, this forfeits the ramp, which is a nice advantage, but it's your only safe response to that kind of a block. So on other maps, and the big thing, the way to look at this too, is the Zerg, let's talk about their commitment. It's drone scouting, which is opportunity cost off the mineral line, which a lot of the time, most of the time, they should be scouting the same stuff, right? They should be scouting a Forge Fast Expand or maybe a one-gate expand on Metalopolis, which is very generic stuff that they'll see all the time. So they really should only be drone scouting if they have the full intention of doing this kind of a block. The block costs 100 minerals when canceling the hatch, but even up until then, it's 300 minerals opportunity cost for that hatchery, which should either prolong your spawning pool or your hatchery. So it is a major wrench in your build. And if you do the instant cancel evolution chamber, that's 175 minerals plus the cost of the drone. How much is an evolution chamber? It's 150, right?
No, it's 75. And just canceling, the you Evo's get 75 cheapest. Minerals, yeah. Like, loss.
Well, when you cancel a hatchery, you lose 100 minerals, don't you?
No, 75.
Okay. So 75 plus 75 of the hatchery, 150 plus the drone.
Yeah.
And that's, in my opinion, a very expensive block. It's fairly similar to the Protoss block when they do like a pylon or a can or something like that. But again, kind of the issue here is that I think Protoss can prolong their Nexus without having quite as big of results, especially because of the inject mechanic against the Zerg. But when the Zerg is prolonging things like a spawning pool or a hatchery, that puts bigger ripples in their build. So the reason I'm kind of going through this long-winded explanation of what happens is you need to, as a Protoss player, not freak out. Like, if you actually just delay your Nexus, build a cannon or two, or even just go gateway off of one gas and then take your Nexus if you one gate expanded, then you're actually not too terribly far behind. The nice thing about that block for Zerg players is they should have practiced that more than a Protoss has. They should have seen it and done it more times. So the Protoss player is more likely to respond incorrectly or freak out, and the Zerg player should have more experience with how to kind of follow that up, if that makes sense.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, definitely makes sense. I was just going to say exactly what you said at the beginning. Is just there's only a few maps where that would theoretically work, and Antigua Shipyard is one where the natural is disjointed. So the cannons are farther away from the Nexus. And
Huge. In
this situation, just to clarify with chat, oh my god, look at that gamer callus. That is ridiculous.
What?
Do you guys ever get those weird little calluses on your wrist from playing too much?
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Well, I've got a bad one right now. Anyway.
You just saw, like, you're...
Yeah, I just
like,
saw it on the webcam, but I'm not actually broadcasting
your thing,
right
so, like, Payne is just like, what the fuck?
I'll restart my webcam after this, but... Okay. Yeah, he actually let the hatch finish. This wasn't a situation where he canceled the hatch and built an Evo chamber or canceled the hatch or something like that. He actually let the hatch finish.
In Antigua specifically, the thing is like usually even if the cannons are up front, once the hatch goes down, like I think I believe and I almost wish that like Idra, who probably never would do this in a million years, could confirm, but maybe you guys can like if I mean you can look at it two ways. He's going to cancel it or he's going to, you know, leave it up and let it try to do something. But I've seen guys just then drop a pylon and two cannons, right? So even if it builds, it's going to be almost dead when it's done. So I guess I was a little surprised and would have to see the game because I would imagine that the Protoss would just say, well, I'll make sure that there's a second cannon close by just to kill it.
I don't know. I would just go, like, I just go Gateway Zealot. And what I've been experimenting with...
Oh, man, I forgot the full... Okay, the Forge got blocked as well. Which, so it was delayed or whatever, so...
Is I think if you pull, like, 5 or 6 probes, and I'm not sure how much this costs. I think... I'm sure it's a lot. Those guys actually can drop the hatchery in conjunction with the Zealot before... like, it'll finish, and it'll have, like, 125, 150 health. Something like that. So, I mean, there's different ways to respond to it. What'll end up happening is this will get done more and more, and we'll see Protoss change their gameplay, which we're already seeing. Like on Antigua Shipyard, if you watch JYP or some of these Protoss players, they don't take the ramp anymore. They actually they do it further back up against the Nexus, so that if they do get blocked, the cannon that they need to make anyways also kills that hatchery, which is now delaying their expansion.
All right.
That was definitely one of the cooler things I saw.
And then you also said that you called Asus ROG basically a what exactly were your words? A TVZ.
A Pult.
TVZ yeah, a clinic. Pult TVZ clinic.
I mean, really though, like Pult's not always my favorite Terran player. Like, just doesn't really identify with my playstyle. I always considered him pretty cheesy.
He doesn't identify with your playstyle, or you don't identify with his playstyle?
I don't identify with his playstyle.
Okay, I was just wondering if maybe he emailed you every once in a while. He's just like, hey, user.
He probably...
Just for the record?
Yeah, his style just never something I really looked up to. I mean, he had a lot of one-base play. He has a lot of very aggressive timings that he hits, but... He's really kind of changed as a player, as a Terran player, and blossomed into an amazing player from the stage that I was just talking about. And his macro games against Zerg throughout the whole tournament were just insanely, insanely good. And his tank pushes are really, really second to none. I mean, he gets beautiful spreads, and he takes really, really important locations on the map when he's pushing against Zergs, and he's super patient, and it's really fun to watch. And he was just devastating everyone.
It was just interesting to see kind of the TZ in first, second, third, fourth, with, of course, Puma taking third, like Jeff said earlier, and then Lucky with fourth. But, yeah, I mean, most of the great games I saw at MLG were TVZs, so they definitely seemed to sort of dominate the weekend. Were there any other other games in particular, Pain User?
I mean, just one other, like, strategical thing that I noticed, there's the one Zerg maneuver, and then a lot of Terran players, a huge problem for Terran in the late game, that I've been noticing as of late was the end game push from Zerg with a ton of Broodlords, Infestors, Queens, you know, they'll pull all the queens in the late game. They'll start transfusing broodlords. They just have this nasty late game mix. And Terrans have a lot of trouble dealing with that push at certain stages in the late game. And I've seen Terran players, Gumiho and... and Pull as well. They will just use it in a way that's pretty amazing to pick up a ton of units and drop in the Zerg main while the push is coming towards them, so that the Zerg player can't commit with his Broodlords and just end the game outright. And I saw him do that twice, which is pretty cool. So it's like, right when the Zerg is starting to do that huge Broodlord push, they'll load up 4 or 5 medevacs worth of units, circumvent the Broodlords entirely, and then drop in the Zerg main. And just take out the Hive and the Greater Spire and any kind of high-tech buildings. And it forces kind of a base trade situation, but it doesn't let the Zerg just outright run you over. And I thought that was something really cool that he was doing.
We actually saw MKP do that in the finals of MLG.
See, I didn't even catch those.
Yeah, the Muslim as a Terran player, have you done at all what Pain User is describing? I mean, what's your thought and philosophy on that? Like, especially because I know dealing with the late 200 max armies can be a pain in the ass.
Well, I haven't really played enough in the new patch to really experiment a lot, but before you could literally just stack up on ghosts and do really well. That's got a lot harder now against the big Broodlord army, and given the slow mobility of the Broodlord force in general, and it has to stick in one glob, you can't split it up because it just becomes way weaker. Definitely doing a massive drop and, like, splitting up your army and then wearing it down slowly, like the actual army itself, and making him have the choice to go for a base trade where you can fly away and stuff, and while he loses his main. It's going to be something I'm going to experiment with. But in general, I think TVZ is going to change a lot. I think we're going to start seeing mech a lot more. Like, it was already becoming a bit more popular before the patch hit, but now that Ghost kind of knocked out the equation quite significantly, I think we're going to see a lot more... big, boxy, strong Terran armies with ravens and turrets spreading out across the maps and such. All right.
primarily mech or still bio or a combination of the two?
I think I was actually talking with a few like Zergs quite a bit. I think we could even start to see like bio at the start switching into mech, like after you've done your damage with the first like initial drops or whatever. But yeah, primarily mech I'm talking
well,
about.
Well, that's essentially what you did in game 3 of you versus Nest T.
Oh, I kind of opened up with like 2-rex cheese and then just switched completely.
Right.
I mean, like,
but you're talking about a solid like into the mid game with bio.
Yeah, I'm talking
right.
about like you invest on stim and combat shields, like maybe not necessarily damage upgrades or armor upgrades, but then making the switch, like that could really knock a lot of Zergs off their toes. Also, the Marines add so much like in the early game, like the Marine Hellion push has become a lot more common, like delaying that third. And then if you switch into like 3 factories from that point, still adding Marines for like a little bit of anti-muter, like I see things changing a lot in TVZ like significantly. I also saw like 2-rex play becoming a lot more popular again. Like there's a patch which made barracks build time a little longer by 5 seconds, and that pretty much fell off the radar, you know. And we saw MKP pretty much win the finals with that build. So
yeah, and we'll talk definitely more about that. In Control, I want to go to you because you're the only one pretty much on the whole panel across the board who watched sort of a mix mash of both. So can you talk to us a little bit about what was your sort of favorite match from ROG and, you know, anything that you saw that you wanted to talk about just from a gameplay perspective?
Well, you know, I like to talk. Real quick, the groups. Cass not making it out of groups. Titan falling to Wilmu and Puma winning his group was, I think, the most expected result, but everything else kind of blowing that away. Moon getting the kiss of death from Artosis. More on that when we get to MLG. Going 1-6 in his group. I think that's quite disappointing. You know, newly signed and supposedly training and taking things serious. Nothing there. And then I think, to a lesser extent, things like Straylock failing in his group. Phoenix, another Korean, and then TLO. Those are kind of surprising results. I was pretty surprised by that. So just kind of the group play in general I thought was quite shocking. But then for me, as I watched ASUS ROG, because I actually watched most of the games, they came on at pretty good hours for me because I was staying up late throughout the weekend to get some StarCraft time in there. But Stefano, once again, proving he's one of, if not the best foreign player, doing really, really good stuff. 3-0-ing Puma, like that sounds... Like, people look at that, and for whatever reason, Puma kind of has, like, this soft... Like, people have a soft opinion of Puma. They, like, he either wins or loses, and people don't feel too strongly about either one, it feels like. But Puma then turned around and 3-0'd Lucky, and Lucky is a freaking fantastic ZVT player. And he's done some pretty good damage there. But then Stefano goes on to have a series of pulled, and if you look at the score, 4-1, you look at that and you think, you know, not that great of a final, but I'll tell you what, I watched every one of those games, and almost every one of those games was not necessarily a nail-biter, but Stefano was hanging in there with one of the best Terrans on the planet, and I thought had a lot of opportunities to win a couple of those games, too. I thought they were highly enjoyable. We're seeing kind of the ascension of this new Zerg versus Terran style, where it's like very heavy upgrades, double evolution chamber, Ling, and Fester into Ultralisk. Mm-hmm. It used to be that every single Zerg did Mutaling Baneling, right? But now we're actually seeing almost every Zerg flip that on its head and do Ling and Fester. Not necessarily into Ultralisk, but at least Ling and Fester openings. And it's really, really cool stuff. And I thought Stefano played exceptionally well, held off some pushes that I think if it was a slightly lesser Zerg, this would have been a 4-0 series and every game would have been about 11 minutes and 27 seconds, just... because Polt did, like, the same push every single game.
Yeah.
But I found it highly enjoyable. I loved it.
To touch on what you just said, I definitely took that away from watching all the games. Stefano is an absolute beast, and not only his ability to hold off pushes, like you were saying, but also his ability to just straight up slam his entire army into a defensive Terran position. Is crazy. I haven't really seen any other Zergs quite like that, but Stefano will not hesitate to attack a fully fortified Terran position, and one thing that he was doing throughout the tournament that he's been doing lately is he will spawn individual infested Terrans and spit them apart from each other before entering into a full-blown conflict. It soaks up 5, 10, you know, maybe 15 volleys worth of siege tanks, depending on individual shots, well, not volleys.
So I was reading a little bit about those games too, because a lot of people just, I mean, Stefano really is one of those players that I think you can go back and you can analyze and see a lot of different things where you're just like, it's crazy to think that he's actually thinking about it on that level. But I was reading one of the guys who had said that, you know, he was basically using it to count how many blasts were there. And then that was telling him, like, apparently how many lings that he needed. So, you know, whatever, it, playing at that level, I guess you get to, you know.
There's no way.
What? Well,
there's,
I mean.
There's no way he was, like, calculating that in-game. Like, there's no way. Unless he's, like, an idiot savant.
Well, you would send out eggs for two reasons, right? You'd send them out, like you said, to try to negate a volley of tanks and attack during, you know, like, right? Or you would send it out because you could tell how many tanks just shot at it. Right? I mean,
I'd definitely give you an idea.
You could tell
how
the difference between three fucking siege volleys and 15 siege volleys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, it doesn't seem too far off.
Yeah, no, I wasn't even talking about that. I was talking about the inference to how many lings you need. That part's ridiculous. Okay. As far as inferring how many siege tanks
right,
are there.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I need exactly 72 lings. Go!
Right? Like, yeah, there's no way. That'd be crazy. And if that is the case, then Stefano is a god amongst men.
Dude, you know what? I didn't think anyone could time 5 to 8 items in their head either in Quake 3. And then I actually heard CZM do it out loud, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
A fucking god does live here on Earth with us. It was totally
Quake 3,
cool.
Is that a SNES game, right?
Yeah, yeah, the one, you know. You play with, like, 2 controllers, Jeff, and it's all...
I heard about that.
Except they took the blood out, you know. You got to put in a code to get it and shit.
Is that really hurt, like, the Nazis and...
Yeah,
like, godhood and stuff like that.
Right,
yeah. I heard about that.
The dogs and chain guns. And, yeah. Okay. Any other comments on, obviously, the Muslim, you weren't watching Asus ROG.
No, I only saw, like, the first game between Polk and Stefano in the finals, yeah, where Stefano actually won. And then I, like, you know, I thought Stefano was going to roll him, but Polk's one of the smartest Terrans out there. Like, I've seen his stream and I've seen him play, and he's actually reasonably slow. Like, I don't want to use that word slow, but he's very, like, he thinks about it as he's playing. Like, his cursor, you'll see it just hover, and then it'll go click on something, but it's, like, the exact right move. Like, his decision-making is really freaking excellent. And, like, everything else is really good in his play, but he's just a really smart player. And just talking about him at the event at MLG, because obviously you spoke about who won Asus. I was speaking to Greg in session. He's one of the Koreans that can speak very fluent English, and he got into the Harvard of Korea and, like, decided to... I think he's studying at the same time, maybe, in this Harvard of Korea.
Wow.
So, yeah, the guy's really freaking intelligent, so it explains why he, like, sussed out Stefano after one game.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's move on and actually let's talk a little bit about your games, the Muslim, your experience at MLG a little bit. And before we actually jump in the game, which I have a few specific questions on, you know, what do you think of sort of the event as a whole? Like, it's been a while. Actually, have you been to another event that's been sort of closed and controlled environment like that before?
I've been to, like, a home story, which is very similar.
Okay.
Like, it was almost a relaxed atmosphere, I think, anyway. Like, obviously, it was still a very serious tournament, but it was more relaxed. You had your room where you could sit in and chill and eat and drink and talk with the other players and stuff. And there was even a situation, or not a situation, but the players could go and commentate certain streams and stuff. So, yeah, home story for me was the most similar event.
Okay. And just so, you know, overall, your playing experience, I mean, we've seen your results sort of, escalate, you know, over the course of the last few months. You know, how'd you feel about how you did and your run through the tournament?
Well, I feel really happy with how I did. I must admit, I looked at the brackets and saw the brackets getting talked about as they were being announced, kind of thing, and JP just being like, ah, yeah, the Muslim's out, kind of thing. And I was like, damn it. Kind of, you know, like, at NST first round, it was just really unfortunate. Then if I lost, it would have probably been Greg, and if I won, it would have been Oz. You know, it wasn't an easy path at all to take. But yeah, I'm truly ecstatic with how I did. I haven't really performed that well for a while, and I knew I was doing pretty good in practice and stuff, just I have pretty bad nerve issues, or I just forget to do very simple things, which can knock me out of tournaments. But, yeah, for, like, one of the best tournaments I've been to in terms of, like, just getting stuff done and, like, the admins being there for every step of the way. I had mice trouble pretty much every PC I went to, and admins were there, like, for hours upon hours sorting stuff out. Like, they gave you food, drinks, whatever you needed, and I felt really well taken care of. They paid for, like, the hotel, the flight there, got you shuttled from the hotel or from the airport, and, yeah, everything was just fantastic. I could not have, like, wished for a better event.
And obviously, you went into the event as a replacement, but you came out qualified for the Winter Championships, which is pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, like, everything about that tournament was cool. Like, you know, I was very lucky to be there. I got owned in the North American qualifier by DDE and Axelav. Like, and then I came back and got to do a consolation bracket where I played against Illusion and Nostalgia and got through. And then, yeah, I was actually going into the tournament thinking that, hey, whatever happens, happens. You know, I'm gonna try. But if I lose, I lose. If I win, I win. I literally went in with no pressure. Usually I go into tournaments and I'm like, okay, I have to win. I have to show everybody I'm good. And I think that that usually goes against me. So I kind of figured out how my brain works and to go in without worrying about winning, like without worrying about like what the forums are going to say when I lose or if I play badly. Like that was always on my mind. So yeah, I'm just truly ecstatic with how things went. I ended up finishing like top 12 in a really stacked field. I got into pool play for Columbus, I believe, and yeah, everything's cool. I got to beat Nesty, got to take a map of Oz. I was, like, leading. And, yeah, I think I showed a lot of people that I'm pretty good. And I just went into the tournament with not a care in the world. And that really paid off.
Okay, so I got a few questions for you because I never really got to clarify this at the event. But during the initial interviews of the whole thing, Greg had kind of alluded to the fact that you had something planned versus Nesty, but obviously he wasn't going to give it away. Now that the game's been played and you actually won, was anything of what he was talking about actually, you know, a part of what allowed you to win? Because in second game, you know, you got something completely different. But anyway, tell us, disclose to us now, please.
I didn't watch Nesty replays and think, like, he's weak here. No, I have a pretty standard build, this Marine Hellion timing, that I've been doing a lot in practice against everybody, and that seemed to go down really well. He didn't expect it. I thought he would have studied my replays and knew that I was doing that, but I'm really not sure what his preparation was, but that kind of did the damage. And, yeah, I spoke to Greg before the games. I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about going mech or something. He's like, okay, if you're going to go mech against anybody, don't do it against Nesty, because MVP is one of the only guys that goes back, and he's in his team, so he's probably playing against
it. Ignored him.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, I mean, Greg gave me some tips, like, just not to go mech against him, but, yeah, I didn't have anything specifically planned for him. I was actually just going to see how he reacts to certain styles and work around it. Like, a lot of it was just, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to stick to this style, like, I pick it at the start of the map or whatever. He vetoed a weird maps to what I thought he would, too. So, yeah, everything was really off the cuff, if you like.
I'll ask Greg what he thinks I should do, then do the opposite.
Well, in all fairness, it was Greg, and of course I call him out while he's not here, but it was Greg who, if I recall, about 2.5-3 weeks ago, pretty much shit all over the head of MKP, saying that he was going to fall off the planet, that, you know, people were figuring him out, et cetera. And I asked him as he was going into the, you know, the after party, I'm like, hey, man, so how upset are you that MKP won? And he goes, oh, man, I just found out. I'm like, so you're pretty pissed? He's like, God damn it. And he walks into that was the extent of that.
Are you saying that Greg was wrong about something StarCraft 2 related?
No, hold on. I'm saying that he was wrong, but about something that he had so much conviction towards.
Wait. Greg stated an opinion with absolute certainty and was still wrong? That's... I'm trying to think of the last time he's ever...
Exactly.
That's weird.
I know it's hard for you to come up with an exact time and opportunity.
That's weird.
But I thought it was kind of funny. So before I ask you about a couple questions about the game versus an STI, I want to ask In Control, right? Because I've watched games with In Control, and I could tell you that it takes a lot to impress that guy. Like, you know, like I've watched games and I'm thinking of a few in particular, you know, and maybe something would impress me, but not necessarily Jeff. So Jeff, you're watching Nesty versus the Muslim. It's your own teammate. Did you ever, like, I mean, were you squealing like a little girl a little bit during that matchup?
Let me answer it this way. And I'll answer very candidly with Ben here. Hopefully you don't mind, Ben, or you're still my friend afterwards. But going into this event, it's kind of a well-known fact that I'm very high up on the Muslim's potential. On every one of my shows, my stream, everything I talk about, I always talk about how much talent he has, how much potential he has. And when people are like, who do you think is going to really shine in 2012? I always say to Muslim. I mean, look back on State of the Game where everyone's saying, oh, he's got no chance. I said, hold the fucking phone. Don't count him out. Of all the people I could think of going up against Nesty as a foreigner, this guy has a really good shot at possibly beating him. And to watch Ben play to the level that I thought he is capable of and should be doing was hugely – I was thrilled. I mean, Anna can vouch for this. I was like – I don't want to say I was crying, but I was close to it. I will say that fucking much because we've worked so hard in this house and so much – criticism is swirling around where it's like, where if you're not in Korea, you don't stand a fucking chance. Like, you shouldn't even play in this game. Or,
yeah.
You know, people just talk all the time about, like, well, if you're just training on North America and you're not, you know, you're just not good enough, you just can't fucking do it. And we've been working, you know, Ben's been working really hard. We've all been working together. And he took one of the best Zergs on the planet and he beat him in a match where it's not like going into this nest, he was like, I don't know. It's a free trip to New York. I don't really give a shit. You know, I haven't really been playing. I just got other things to do. Nope. He got there early. He started training. He cared a whole shit ton. He's undisputedly one of the best players on the planet. Maybe he's not the absolute best anymore, but he's one of them. He's absolutely in the top.
Yeah, for sure.
5 or 10, okay? And the Muslim beat him. And for us at EG, for me personally, for the guys at the house, this was a victory for all of us, whether Ben knows it or not. And we were really excited about it, really happy. So to watch that, it was actually like kind of emotional for me. And the other big thing, too, and the reason why I said hopefully Ben will still be my friend after this, is Ben's weakest part of his gameplay is his head. I feel like sometimes he goes to tournaments, and one of the first things he does subconsciously is he gives himself an excuse to not do as well as he's capable of doing. He'll either say to himself, like, the chair's too high, or it's too warm, or I didn't get to sleep, or my mouse isn't really working, or he's actually got a lot of excuses that I could list right now. He knows about that. And he went into this tournament, and he overcame those things. He sat down in a different kind of environment, one guy across from one of the best players on the planet, and he beat him. So the other nice thing, too, is whether Ben knows it or not, he's one of the EG heroes right now. We've been really sucking ass in the clan leagues. We've been having a tough time. People have been like, finally, that EG team's falling off the map. You know, they're all person.
Falling
and
off the map.
He sat down in the first fucking match. He said, STFU haters, you know, like, get the hell out. And it was just absolutely an amazing thing. And in the games, the nice part about it for me, too, was a lot of people wanted to make excuses like Nesty wasn't playing his best. Who gives a shit? It's a best of three. He played well enough to beat just about anybody else. And that game number three, if you're not a fan of that game, I don't know. So it was amazing.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, let's specifically talk about game three, because I want to reference back to something that you said earlier to Muslim, and that was the fact that you think you're going to see more Terrence go, you know, mech versus Zerg, and that this was even happening before the patch. And, you know, frankly, there was some horror to, like, how it was all kind of going down in the third match, because it literally went back and forth to the point where it's like, oh, my God, well, the Muslim's about to kill him right here. And then, oh, my God, it's like, no, Nesty brought it back, and he's about to kill him. And, you know, I will never forget in my whole entire life watching your, like, 130 supply mech army fucking tuck itself into that back alley of Shakura's Plateau and somehow defend the shit out of itself when it seemed like there was no fucking way that was going to happen. So talk to me about that game specifically, because I really feel like you know, there had to have been moments. I remember where the Broodlords were starting to come out and you didn't have the Vikings ready yet. He had mass made a bunch of corruptors at one point. Like, I would love to kind of hear, even from start to finish, you start out with a two racks, it fails. Where do you go from here? And the fact that that's game three.
Yeah. Well, to start out the game, like the two racks that I did, proxy two racks, it was in the position where, like, every position that he scouted, it wasn't there, and it was, like, in the one place he didn't. I got to his base, and there was just one bit of creep that just spread instantly to where my bunker was going to go, so my two, like, my proxy T-Rex failed. But, yeah, as the game went on, I got smushed into that little corner. Yeah, I heard everybody behind me, like, you're not in a soundproof box or anything. I heard everybody behind me going, like, oh, shit, like, he's going to lose. I especially heard, like, Hook going, what's happening, I can't see. Because he can't see very far. And then everybody's like, oh, fuck, it doesn't look good. And then all of a sudden his army started melting away. Like, his Broodlords started stacking, and my Thors started getting off really good volleys, and the Banelings just kind of missed out on just killing like Thors and stuff. Like, yeah, everything went as good as it could have done in that engagement where he kind of lost 60 supply, lost next to nothing. Like, yeah, I was really, really happy. Like, I was biting my teeth like the whole match. I think after my two racks failed, I was 27 supply against 60 or something. And yeah, I mean, it was one of those games that I don't believe I made that many mistakes going like past the 10-minute mark, and I feel that showed. But like, yeah, he had me on the ropes, I felt, the whole game. And yeah, especially that little crack in the corner. Like, the only reason I went there was because it gave my army less surface area for the Broodlings to hit me. It also meant that all his Broodlords would kind of gather up as close as they could, given that it's only one point to attack from. And he ran out of Infestors. If he had, like, two Infestors just for Fungals, right, things could have been a lot different. Like, yeah, so I don't recommend doing that to anybody else if there's Infestors there. But, yeah, just the situation called for it, and I reacted, and I'm really happy with how things went.
Was there actually a point in that game where you thought you had won, but then you didn't win? Because there was at one point you had destroyed like a good amount of his army, and I think that you kind of sat outside his natural for a moment before you finally went up and took his third. Mm. And it seemed like this was a moment where maybe you had enough to go and do something.
There was two moments when I felt really good. There was one moment when I was putting down the proxy rexes, and I was like, oh shit, I've never put them here before, but this feels like a really good place to put them. And he didn't scout it at all. A drone ran into my base as they finished, and I was like, okay, he knows I'm proxy rexing, but, you know, it's too late now. I'm going to get up my bunkers and stuff. And then there was literally, like, this little sprout of creep that spread and blocked it, and I was like, oh shit. You know, like, it just, everything went bad in my mind from then. But, yeah, the only point that I really thought I won was when his little army started running away, and he lost, like, six Infestors to tanks, and his last Broodlord was dying. Like, that was the only point where I really thought I won. There was one point where I overcommitted to killing his third, and I didn't realize his bank was enough to get, like, 50 roaches at one time. Where, like, you know, which other Zerg does that? But he had, like, somewhere around 3,000 to 4,000 minerals and 50 larvae available, and did just that and killed my army for, like, the fifth time in the game. So, yeah, at that point, I was kind of like, oh, damn, this is tough. Like, I'm going to have to work really hard for this win, but yeah, I mean, my heart was pounding. After the first game, even, I asked the admin, like, can I get up and just walk around and go outside for some air? Cause, like, and he said no. And then I was just like, Cody, I need some help. Like, I need a few minutes to just calm down. But yeah, the whole thing was, like, so exciting. Like, I think the guys playing on the finals match in the red and blue, like, on the stage and stuff, like, behind me, there was way more people than they had in the room watching the main game. So, yeah, like, everything was just frickin' fantastic. I loved every minute.
One of the big themes of this particular MLG Winter Arena for me was the fact that it was probably the tournament in which I saw, and I don't even want to call it cheese, I would just rather call it a lot of early aggression. And when I say that, I mean really, really early aggression. This was both on the Zerg side, this was both on the Terran side, and shit, We even saw MC go out in a game three fucking super baller cannon rush on Metalopolis from the natural. Jeff, from a spectator point of view, because I know it's probably impossible to watch all of them, but did you happen to see this as well? I mean, we even saw it in the finals, right? A little bit.
Yeah.
But over the whole 3 days, I was like, I just can't even believe it. We're, you know, and I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, criticizing it. I think it's great because I would love to see more people, like, thinking about it from that perspective. And, you know, maybe I feel like it's a natural progression anyway. But anyway. What do you think?
A couple things happened. First and foremost, one of the things that contributed to this was the patch hit a day or two before.
Mm-hmm.
And any time there's new information abound, so things like Snipe was kind of complicated. We weren't quite sure how that figured out. It's not like we saw a whole lot of the Phoenix upgrades going in there, but certainly that does play a little bit into the mind game of a Zerg player. Like, Armuda is now completely worthless. I don't know. I haven't experimented mm-hmm. with it very much. There's that. The next thing is a combination between travel and tournament play in general. When you're playing a like opener slash reactive play style, it takes a lot more thought process. Like, of course, everyone has an opening build, but if their build isn't timing oriented or cheese oriented, it has a very flexible nature to it. So you're much more it's much more demanding that you're making reads off your opponent, reacting to what you're seeing being done, and playing more organically. Whereas if in the other part of that, excuse me, is travel. When we have travel, where you call it jet lag, you can call it being tired, whatever you want, you're at a lesser physical state. So all those things, plus the fact that it's tournament play, which means there's a lot of anxiety for even these world-class Koreans, of course, to lesser extents than other players, all of that means that you could play that much more mentally demanding, physically demanding style where you need to be reactive and making reads all the time, or you can have this build that you have timed down where it hits at 10 minutes and 30 seconds. Or you have this rush that is going to get the game over with, win or lose, at 7 minutes and 30 seconds. Those styles are builds that you've practiced 1,000 times. You know right. them in and out. There's no brain power. There's very little ingenuity or creativity being used there. It's just, boom, this is what I do. Those things get called up more often when those factors I just stated are at play. So if the game gets complicated by a patch, travel, you're tired, or you're anxious because of a tournament, you're going to get more cheese. And all those things happening at the same time meant that this tournament was always going to see a higher degree of cheese.
That's an interesting perspective. Paid user, do you have anything to say about that? Because it asks, I mean, you know, in terms of the – and granted, I casted probably more games than I would at a typical event this weekend – but I also just happen to get quite a few of those. So, you know, have you ever found yourself in that situation, paying user, where you're like, well, I know I'm not too good on this patch or this map or whatever. I'm going to do this or.
I mean, that was kind of sort of always the style that I played with. Except I would say for me personally, it's a little bit of a combination of the two. It's not necessarily as black and white for me as the way Jeff was putting it. I like to try to incorporate those hard timings and those preset build orders into my overarching game plan. Because I feel like having those set timings and those predisposed build orders that you just know like the back of your hand is just so important. And having a good macro-centric build, you can kind of branch off and adapt in a lot of different ways. Even if it has timings that you hit in the game, like in TVZ, for instance, the Terran 2 base, you know, Marine tank medevac timing on the Zerg 3rd or 4th, depending on how fast the Zerg's macroing, is a timing that I will hit in almost every single TVZ. And the lead up to that in every single TVZ for me is very similar, unless I'm going mech or something. And then from there, you can kind of adapt and branch off to what's happening in the actual game. So for me, it's just a little bit of both. I like having those set timings incorporated into my build, but I also like kind of playing like water in a way, just kind of like bending and adapting to whatever your opponent does. That's definitely a really, really important aspect of it. And if Ben's more comfortable playing like that, then that's awesome. And that's awesome that you found that. Because I think a lot of players struggle to really find what's the best play style for them. And you experiment with different types of play styles all the time when you're playing and when you're practicing.
Well, I I think the kind of concept of early aggression from kind of in control, what you said, someone was telling me that actually Lenok fell asleep during one of his games, like literally kind of like nodded off momentarily. So that shit can affect you, man. It really can. But I had a great time at the MLG Winter Arena. I thought the finals games were really great. Obviously, I have several other games that were memorable. I thought even Huck had a couple of games where I was like, wow, I'm just sort of really impressed with, like, how he was thinking about the game. And, you know, I know in a lot of these cases, some of these guys are doing stuff that they've done before in the past, but when you don't have a chance to watch every single game ever, you know, sometimes that stuff comes up as new. But Huck did some really cool Phoenix stuff and,
you know,
Vision and stuff.
On Huck, it's funny, too, because you asked me about having this different perspective where I'm an observer. And it was a little bit disheartening specifically with Huck kind of watching. And, of course, I'm biased, so if people need to get that out of the way, we can do that right now. He's on my team. LOL. There you go. We have it.
But,
oh, God. And it was really tough because people, like, at the end of the day, Huck takes third place. And a lot of the comments were like, yeah, well, get an easy bracket. Get the fuck out of here. Like, you are an absolute effing idiot. No, he didn't hit, like, the hardest bracket. Nobody's saying that. But beating Rhett, Oz, that, I mean, give me an effing break. And, like, people are so quick to underrate Sock as well. He's only one of the best Protosses in all of Europe. Like, give me a freaking break.
Always has been.
Fantastic tournament. I mean, beating Rhett and beating Oz alone makes that a good tournament for him. And it was really disheartening to see so many people talk about how, like, beating Rhett is, like, not this big of a deal. Like, they're like, yeah, he had Rhett in the third round. Like,
yeah.
That's a joke of a tournament. Like, Rhett is actually freaking fantastic. Like, for the people that train and know both those guys, myself included, let me just say this. Like, Huck is the hard counter to Rhett. All those PVZ openings take place and take shape within, like, 11 minutes of the opening of the game. And it just so happens that that's the softest chunk of time for Rhett as well. So yeah. Huck is the hard counter to Rhett. But that is still a legitimate win. Like, Rhett was an absolute monster mode in that tournament, beating MVP as well as other players. And he's one of the best players on the planet when he's in that kind of mode. And Huck stomped him into the ground. So, like,
yeah, and not only that, Rhett seems to always find that mode come tournament time. He's no slouch, you know?
Yeah, he played well.
Oz has like an 85% win rate PvP. Huck going into the match said that of all the Protoss players he plays with, he thinks he's like the best PvP player on the planet. And that was something that a lot of people had been talking about. And then Huck sits down with him in a high-intense situation, 2-0. Like, that is not the Demuslim over Nestie kind of win, because for some reason everyone expects Huck to beat everybody. And then when he loses, like, LOL, you know, he hasn't been practicing or something like that. But in this case, like, that's a huge win. I'm sorry, guys. That's a big deal. And then, of course, he ran into the monster brick walls that were Dong, Regu, and Marine King. And,
yep.
And it was their day to shine, man. I didn't even think Marine King was going to be able to take on Dong, Regu with the way he was playing. But, congrats to both of them. It was just a little bit disheartening. There was a couple things like that. I'm trying to, like, there was a couple other people that were really down on some of the players. And they weren't even EG guys, so people can throw that excuse out the window. It was just kind of tough watching from an observer perspective, because a lot of that negativity that people talk about was very present. And there was also a lot of caster bashing, too, which I think is a little bit stupid. I'll throw the name out there, and it shouldn't get that much attention, but I just want to call it out for how bad it is. People were really bad on Tumba, or Tumba, or however you want to say that. He's actually a pretty great caster, and I thought he did a phenomenal job. And he's one of the hardest working people in all of esports, so it's really saddening to me when I see so many people, like, they only see him cast, and then they take the energy that they have from seeing that to then just write some hate at that guy. He actually has helped to play him. He's actually a big promoter for wellplayed.org, another community website. He's the lead broadcaster. He's, like, in charge of the beta stream for MLG, which is a new big deal for MLG. That guy is behind the scenes doing really good stuff for the community. He deserves your respect, and please, in the future, consider giving it to him.
Yeah, I totally agree with Jeff on all points. Like, I don't know whether it's just the general audience right now isn't quite as educated on all the players as, like Jeff was saying, you know, we've played with them before. We have a deep understanding and respect for how talented they actually are. And it seems like the community really has this tendency to just gravitate towards the superstar players and, you know, just see how they're doing in the tournament and just, like, discard all the other players in the tournament. And I think that players at this level should be given the due respect.
I mean, I think in some regard, just people want to compare, right? As long as we have these sort of competitive, you know, environments where, you know, we don't have one guy winning all the time, right? So instead of talking about the one guy who would normally be winning all the time, we like to talk about all the people who just aren't winning or haven't won or aren't going to win. Or and I don't know why it is either, Pain User, to be honest. But, I mean, like, let's just shift focus real quick to Marine King. Talk about a guy who has probably gotten more, undeserved shit than you know, okay, let's say Koreans, right? Other than, like, Bit by Bit Prime, who probably deserved it a little bit, you know. I mean, Marine King has traditionally been sort of – he's loved, but he's hated. It's, like, almost – I don't know. It's an interesting thing. But he finally did break the yellow curse and took the competition. And, I mean, you can't not look at him and still really go – God, but he's so bad. I mean, you know, even if he does use just fucking Marines, so what, man? He's good at it. Like,
Marine King's micro is something of another world.
He's always around the top of the Korean ladder. He's always in and around the finals.
He's the best on the Korean ladder right now. Like, yeah. I was speaking to everybody at the event, like, as far as I know, it was only Greg that said he was bad. Like, I spoke to Naniwa, and as soon as, like, he saw Marine King in his second round, he's like, okay, I'm done. I'm, like, in the lower bracket. And I was like, why? And he said, have you seen the Korean ladder? And then him and Sasae both, like, you know, it was about speaking, like, the legend, you know, like, speaking about Zoro or some, like, Kaiser Soze, like, oh, my God, this guy's unbeatable kind of thing. And they just, like, spoke in awe about the guy, you know? So I don't know where it got that, like, oh, yeah, this guy's trash or whatever. Like, the big thing about Marine King is he's so versatile, which when Greg says, oh, this is trash and cheesy, no, he can just play anything he wants to, and that's what makes him so tough, and he does it so perfectly. So, yeah, I don't know where that came from. I have no idea.
I think like, to try to psychoanalyze this, so follow me down this rabbit hole for a second. Like, okay. He's a smaller guy. He is kind of – he's on the, like, adorable side, even by Korean standards. When he loses, he cries. That's happened a few times on stage. And a lot of times when he loses, because he sometimes plays himself into a corner, like he does do pretty zany stuff. If you try cheese or you try something off the box and then outside the box, excuse me, and then it loses, it usually looks worse. Like when someone is doing something that other people haven't seen before or as much of, when it loses, everyone's like, "What the hell was he trying to do? That's really stupid. It looks really bad." So that's happened a greater number of times to Marine King, which then results in – and also it's not to be down-talked or down-spoken. I don't know. My English has gone to shit right now.
Oh, my God.
Not to be thrown out the window. But when you do have like a very vocal and a huge fan base like Idra saying he's terrible and he's trash, there's going to be a percentage of those people that say, well, that is what it is then because he said that. So there's all these kind of things circling around that make it easy to look at Marine King and find him – lesser than, you know, but everything I've ever heard is that when there's no pressure on the line or when he's like calm, he is hands down one of the top three best players on the planet. Like, he's had nerve issues at tournaments, which is weird because he's been in the finals of like every tournament since the beta.
Yeah.
To be fair, the reason this is also kind of weird is like just to back Greg up a little bit. Generally, he's on point when he says somebody's like a cheesy, crappy, trashy player, which is the weird thing about this situation.
Are you sure? Because Greg's made more people than anybody else, like in terms of players. When Greg insults somebody, they usually beat him and then they're famous, you know? Like that.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about like the upsets throughout history. I mean, obviously there have been some situations where he calls people out and they prove him wrong, but if you think of the amount of people that he's called out versus the people that have upset him and beat him in future later down the line, I mean, I think usually he's pretty on point, at least in my experience. His idea of what a cheesy, crappy player is kind of on point with mine. Except
I don't know. I lived with him, so like everybody was a cheesy, crappy player, you know, like or the vast majority of people. So
you know,
I don't know.
And I think Pain User has Idris Facebook fan page on tap.
No,
yeah, definitely. one of my favorite moves, Marine King, the weekend. You know, aside from just some really nasty, gnarly aggression. was during game four of the finals. This was the first game after the or into the extended series, and it took place on Entombed. Okay. I want to bring it up. You know what I'm talking about?
The floating building?
The floating building.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that what you're gonna call it, the Muslim? He's not even gonna give it a name.
I'm not giving what kind of building was it? No, you can talk about this.
What kind of building was it? You said earlier.
I thought it was great.
King's nod to Dustin Browder.
Yeah. Is that what you said? That's what you said.
No, the Muslims called it, I think it was a cheeky little play.
A cheeky little play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was really, really cool. And, I mean, people have thought about doing it for a while, but he actually went ahead and did it against
executed
best Zerg in the world, you know? Like, he was ahead, and it was, like, very showmanship-y. But, yeah, it, like, definitely sealed the win. Like, he was 90% ahead, but then it was, like, 100% ahead with that move. And, yeah, it was really sick and really cheeky to do that in a final, too. Like, yeah, it must have got Domrigu up and, like, a bit angry, you know, for that final game.
Well, you know, I mean, that's great.
I mean, The thing that I really, really like about it is, like, in all actuality, you know, it's not that amazing. You know, he landed a factory and blocked a movement path. Like, you know, in your head, it's not that momentous of a change in the metagame. But in actuality, having the wherewithal in the middle of a game to actually land that factory in a place that makes a difference. And then also, you know, players have said about him that he's, or the Marine King, that is, that he's one of the players, one of the few players that actually uses his factory to bait incoming fire as well. He'll, you know, he'll kind of post his factory on the outskirts of his bio ball and use it to absorb incoming stalker fire and then kind of play the battle off of that. So, you know, it's just really cool to see a player going down different avenues and utilizing kind of weird things like that to take the game to the next level. Because we're at a point now in StarCraft 2 where it's like changes like that are pretty amazing. I mean, it's not every day that you see people using new things, new build orders, stuff like that. So I think just small little things like that are really cool. I liked it a lot.
Can I bring some up?
Yes, please do.
In my opinion, this might be the most tragic thing from the tournament, but I'll explain it fully. I think Naniwa had one of the best tournaments of the whole tournament. I think his results are absolutely mind-boggling good. And I guess the tragic part that I'm trying to bring up is maybe it's due to, like, the public perception of him or, I don't know, like, the lack of advertisement from his team Quantic, not to throw them under the bus, but I'm not quite sure why this isn't as big of a deal as it should be. But beating Nesty 2-1, beating Leenok 2-1, coming back from 0-1 against Bolton, beating Chef 2-1.
I totally
a lot of people,
agree.
For whatever reason, underrate Chef. He's actually one of the best CVP players on the planet. Beating Grubby, who's been absolutely on fire. Grubby would later go on to beat Locira. You know,
yeah,
of course,
well,
it's a different
yeah.
matchup, so that math doesn't add up. But still, Grubby's a fantastic player. Naniwa, in the PVZ matchup in particular during this tournament, blew me away. Leenok was like his counter, like in GSL and in MLG Providence. It just looked like Naniwa didn't have an answer. Nesty has to be playing harder against Naniwa than anybody else on the effing planet. I just have to believe that. The guy's probably so sick and tired of losing to Naniwa, especially with all the attention that match always gets. And Naniwa still bested him. Of course, it seems to be on more friendly terms now, which I'm happy about. But Naniwa, like, he says a lot of stupid shit, obviously, but he plays a freaking good brand of StarCraft 2, and holy crap, I can't believe that it's not at the headlines that one. I mean, because going into this tournament, by the way, too, the stratosphere, if you will, or, like, what people were talking about is, like, how foreigners have fallen even further behind Koreans. There's just no chance in hell.
Yeah.
And I'm so tired of bringing this up every tournament, but I guess the reason I'm bringing it up is because I feel like I have to keep holding the torch for the foreigners. Like, at every one of these tournaments, big Koreans lose to foreigners. It just freaking happens.
But in some regards, it is like, you know, the competition and the broadcast, especially, like, it follows the storyline. Like, up to the point where Naniwa was just like, he was just wrecking every top level Korean Zerg that has ever existed. I mean, he almost went through every single champion, right? And I think that if he had and then gone on to win the tournament, that people would say undoubtedly that he had the best tournament run of any StarCraft II player that has ever lived, right? So he had, he was like building, he was writing the chapters, and then it was like the author died before the end of the book, you know? Like what's going to happen with Game of Thrones, basically.
Don't you dare.
I'm sorry. That was a bad joke. That was horrible. I'm sorry. God, Jeff hates me now. But, you know, it was the same thing because then what happened, right? Two things. Suddenly the storyline shifted, Jeff, to could this be Huck's third championship or will MKP finally not get second? And, you know, it is too bad. It really is because what happens in a lot of these is that it comes down to, like, what do the last four games give you? But I think that as more and more of these tournaments happen, we're seeing more things, more storylines. Like, I can't tell you the storylines that came out of the first MLG StarCraft II event. I couldn't because, but, like, it seems like every single event we're seeing more and more of this stuff.
Yep.
Well, I mean, what do you think about that? In terms of, like, the fact that a lot of Naniwa's performance, although extraordinary, was overshadowed by the fact that he wasn't able to sort of, like, you know, it's like getting people's hopes up.
I mean, there's always going to be predominant storylines, and there's going to be reasons for it, too. Like I said, Naniwa has kind of always been one of the best, so when he has a run like this, it's not quite as miraculous. It's not quite as amazing. If Grubby would have chewed through these players, I guarantee you it would have overshadowed Marine King. Like, it would have been the top stories.
Right.
That, wow, Grubby, the Warcraft 3 legend, the guy who's a great caster now, everyone loves him, he just turned it on in this tournament and took 12th place or whatever it was that Naniwa took. You know, like not the best performance from everyone, but it was the run that made it the big storyline. It was the people going into it. So that's part of it. The other part, too, is I kind of blame the media. Like, I want more coverage of this stuff. Where is my Quantic headline about Naniwa's amazing performance? Where is – and maybe it is out there, and I'm an idiot that didn't check it. But I would like it if this kind of stuff was forced upon me. I would like it if teams celebrated their players' performances.
They do have. Let's bring it up because, you know, we got to give credit where credit is due.
There you go.
Over on Quantic Gaming, there is a top article. Looks like it came out day after. And it just says Team Razor's Quantic Naniwa, the Kingslayer MLG winner 2012.
And you know what? Like I said, maybe they tweeted it. Maybe it's been linked around and it just evaded me. But I'm usually a pretty good guy about reading just about every major article that gets written. I didn't see anything about that.
You know, and honestly, I would even take it one step further, Jeff, because, I mean, you know, most of the time, the teams are going to cover it themselves. But it's beyond that, right? You're talking about what is beyond that. And, I'm guessing, like, what is where is all of the, well... because there was not a whole lot of press there. You know, would that have made a difference? I think ESFI World would have covered that in a major way. I think that some of these other sites that are trying to do more StarCraft II coverage in a journalistic fashion would cover a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But so I agree with your call, man. And you know what? I would even bet that Slasher would agree with you right now. You would agree on something, you two.
Came down to it.
Let's
get Slasher on it, man.
Get Slasher. Nothing.
Oh, yeah, get Slasher on it. He could cover some of those interesting stories.
He did GameSpot coverage, actually.
Congrats to Slasher.
Yeah, that got it. And watch my interview with him when it comes out, because I totally troll him. It's awesome.
As much shit as Slasher gets, esports needs that guy getting paychecks from esports, and it needs him around. So I hope his relationship with GameSpot takes off and we see more of him.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, he loves esports, and he's very opinionated, and he's not afraid to share his opinion. And he gets a lot of shit for it, but it's definitely something I respect. Whether or not I agree with him is a completely different story.
I'm going to open up the phone lines.
Okay.
Are you down with that?
Let's do it.
Let's see.
I'm down.
All right. We're going to take our first call here. We've got – oh, he hung up. That son of a gun. All right. Now we'll take our first call. We got Mubert on the line. What's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi, I watched MLG over the weekend thanks to the incognito window thing, and I was wondering if any of you guys also were able to tell there was something wrong with Tasteless.
Like what?
Like like a drug addict. I don't know.
What? What? No.
Was this like during the stream or something? Like
his red eyes. He was fumbling with his hands. Have you guys seen that? You guys haven't seen the pictures of him with the syringe, the alleged flu shot.
Thanks, Mubert. Thanks a lot.
The alleged flu shot?
Dude, man, there's a whole layer of the StarCraft II universe that you don't even fucking understand, pain user.
Alleged flu shot.
I don't know.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Lost. Like,
I don't know. That,
is that,
that
even a thing? Is this real life? Is that a thing? The alleged flu shot.
Apparently, like, it's a thing.
Is that a thing?
Alright.
I don't even know if that's a thing. Is that... That's not a thing.
Dude. The guy wasn't even subtle at all. Like,
you could have hung up on him just on his tone of voice.
But sometimes...
He sounded, legit, distressed. Like... He's like, you guys didn't see? Like, nobody else noticed? Like, he's, concerned. Like, he's like, you know, one of you guys should really talk to him.
Wow, man. You know, I thought we were going to talk about the games, but we got Rapture on the line. What's up, Rapture? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Gentlemen, repent. The Rapture is here. That was pretty funny. I was actually know Mubert from very, very casually. And
Wow.
Pretty trolling.
All right,
what's going on?
Anyway... I actually didn't think I'd get through. I actually have 2 points I want to throw at you guys. One is for current events, and one is just something I've wanted to throw on a one more game show period. I wanted to do on Live on 3 with Scoots and Slasher, but Jeff made a point earlier, or rather made a comment, that I kind of want to, it kind of ties in.
Okay, go ahead then.
First thing is, you know, the majority of the show has been around the Muslim. Dude, you did a fantastic job at MLG. Fucking congrats at it, right? You destroyed people. It was fantastic. And you should be proud of that. But, like, my to get to the nitty-gritty here, like, what did you place?
9th to 12th.
9th to 12th? See,
yeah.
The thing is, guys, is
what'd
I've
you
seen
place?
A lot of foreign sites.
Rapture?
Huh?
Oh, never mind. Go ahead. You've seen a lot of foreign sites.
Oh, no, don't hate on me about this. This is not a bashing thing at all. This is a really encouragement thing. And I'm not taking anything away from the Muslims run because it was fan-fucking-tastic.
Okay.
Anybody who says otherwise is just wrong. But the thing I'm seeing a lot of foreign sites is, and a lot of foreign fans, is we're celebrating sixth-place finishes compared to, Korean players and stuff like that. Like, we're doing a lot of that. I've been seeing a lot of that. And I'm just kind of, I'm sitting back here and I'm just like, am I the only one who's getting really tired of Koreans smacking around white people? Like,
what
I mean, I know I'm not
the
only one, but...
What's the better future? Like, we don't talk about placements and we only talk about Korean winning?
No. You don't base a whole show around it. Like, we're it seems
wait
like
wait a second. We talked about Marine King
phone.
Talking.
We had Marine King winning. We'd have him here, right?
Yeah, I don't...
The Muslim as a guest on the show. I don't... Hey, Muslim, you placed, 9th or 12th, whatever.
Let's talk about
what we think Marine King will say.
That's not what I'm saying at all. My point is that it feels like, as a community, I'm on Reddit, I'm on Team Liquid, I'm on
but
all
why
these
are I understand you have this issue, but you know what I feel? You know what I feel like, Rapture? I feel like you're trying to bundle all this blame on Inside the Game because we chose to use the Muslim on the show because we have access to him and he had a fucking great tournament. No, I don't. I'm not. Fuck it. I'm done with it.
Wait,
I'm done.
Hey, honestly, I think.
Fuck!
Wait, caller, what was your name again? Or your alias?
He's done. He's done.
You already axed him?
Fucking A, I did. I'm done with it.
All right.
Give me a fucking break.
I was going to try and repair
don't
that,
step
but
on the toes of
done.
A weed rant. You just cut a weed rant off, and I will forgive you this one time. So Jesus
it's,
Christ.
It's done. Yeah, is that Abby?
That
was that who was laughing right there?
That's Abby, yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah, Abby. That's what I'm talking about, right? Excellent. I'm done.
Can we rant a little bit more about this, though? I got it going a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get – first off, I don't get it. It'd be like, hey, guys, you know what? The Olympics was last weekend, and God damn it, those Japanese swimmers, they really kicked our ass. So let's just talk about the Japanese swimmers. Even though we're from the United States, you know, Michael Phelps, he did pretty good. He didn't get all the gold medals that he got last time, but he got second place. And then some guy's calling up and be like, you know what, for being a fucking American-based news show, I just don't understand why you'd even do a piece on Michael Phelps. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you should just not ever broadcast his name ever.
How stupid does a fucking show look if they've got Michael Phelps sitting next to him at the Olympics, and they talk about everything but him, and then at the end someone's like, hey, what about Michael Phelps? And then you go, he took second place, you stupid bitch. You don't talk about second place. And he's like, shut up, Michael Phelps. Place higher than second.
Well, I'm a huge advocate of bringing up our own, you know? I mean, we need to have our own superstars over here in the West, and it's got to be a grassroots thing, because obviously we look over to Korea and we see all the superstars from over there. Sure, it's fun to focus on that, and it's,
what,
I guess.
Hold on, chat, you know what? Normally I just ignore you, but seriously, I'm about to issue a giant fuck you to a lot of you, saying that I missed the point. Look, man, fucking he called into my show, immediately went on the fucking offensive, was totally passive-aggressive. I don't care if I got his point or not. He does that, you come on our show and do that shit, then I will fucking hang up on your ass. Done deal. You could have presented it better. So go make a goddamn Reddit thread and see if you could get a fucking circle jerk going on over there, all right?
Damn it, Wheat.
I'm done with it.
I've been trying to tell you the whole time that we all completely missed the fucking point. I think he was trying to tell us that he wanted to see more focus.
I don't care what he was trying to tell me, Pain User. You're missing my point. He came all passive-aggressive towards us, trying to say that we brought the Muslim on the show and fucking celebrated someone who did well. That is how he came at us.
I didn't catch that evil underlying.
What do you mean you didn't catch it?
With us.
How do you not catch it, man?
I don't know.
Look, the point is that he might have had the greatest goddamn point in the world, Pain User. But don't come at me like that, man. It's just like you don't flash a fucking toy gun at the cops, right? Just stupid. Don't fucking come on here thinking you're going to make little pokes and then get off with your fucking nice little comment. Bullshit,
next caller,
man.
You better.
Next caller for reals, dude.
It's your fucking DJ Sit fucking down. Weed on the fucking warpath.
Dude, he can fire up his own show and I'll call in and he can hang up on me all day and make condescending remarks. That's
can
great.
We not forget he opened up with Rapture, Repent?
Yes, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people should be trying to take his side as a serious.
Hey, Brian, what's up? Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Oh, hey, what's up? I was wondering, have you guys discussed the Playhem drama that actually happened?
Lighten us.
All right, well, what was happening is Dragon, formerly on Team Slayers, I'm sure you all know Dragon.
Yeah,
no. He was in the tournament or whatever, and the casters were casting him, and he was quote-unquote lagging, which he was, like, and then the caster was making, like, I don't know. He was implying that Dragon was stream sniping or stream cheating in the tournament of the Playhem, which is pretty, you know, out there. Like, that's a pretty hard accusation to put, and that's, like, what everyone basically agrees on, and I just want to know your guys' opinion on it.
What little I saw was that the casters were actually saying some things specifically about Dragon.
Yes, that's what happened.
And, you know, like, I understand he has a little bit of a maybe some bad marks on his past, you know. I'm not necessarily someone who is going to be so eager to, you know, to hold a grudge like that. And I didn't really hear what was said. So, I mean, I don't know, but my opinion is kind of like if you just don't know, then maybe it's just not really appropriate to talk about, especially when it's something that would be like, you know, if I went on and I was like, yep, I'm pretty sure that the Muslim's a map hacker or that he was watching this stream while he was playing cats or something, you know, like that has some pretty serious allegations behind it, whether you have 50 people that are watching you or whether you have 3,000 people that are watching you. So, I mean, I just think maybe that was, like, bad judgment, but I also haven't heard it. So, I don't know. Maybe it isn't that bad. In Control, you said earlier that you sort of knew about it. I mean, is there anything you would comment on?
It's, like, there's so many Play Him dailies. It's every single day. Let me take it from this perspective. This is how they responded. They apologized to him in, like, two threads on Reddit and Team Liquid. They offered to fly him and pay for his hotel to IPL4 to compensate for these bad comments, and then they fired Katu. This is the most thorough, generous, insanely, like, on-point response to a league drama thing like this that I've ever seen. And I mean that. I mean, like, ever. He basically was like, he's probably stream chatting, and then everyone started raging at him. And then Play Him is like, shit, that was really bad. We'd like to spend thousands of dollars on flying you to this top tournament. Is that okay? It's not like everyone in the stream chat was like, oh, I didn't know that. Now I hate Dragon. I'm going to go unfollow him on Twitter, and I'm suing the country of Korea right now for producing Dragon. You know, like, none of that happened. Everyone pretty much wrote it off. So it was a pretty, as far as I'm concerned, like, yeah, it was really bad judgment by the commentator, but... I was reading the stream, or I got, like, so many tweets at me and, like, so much shit circling around it that I was expecting Katu to have, like, posted financial information of Dragon online and to have, like, I don't know, like, drawn pictures of him and stuff that's, like, really mean intent, with mean intent. But, no, he just kind of was a jackass, and I think everything's done. Like, there's not a whole lot to talk about. I'm sorry for Dragon's inconvenience, but shit, if a commentator out there in the leagues would like to talk some shit about me...
So you can just get
fly me out there.
Right.
I'm all game. Like, come at me. Well, my ego can take it, and I would appreciate the flight.
So there you go, Brian.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I was just wondering. You should definitely do Stay of the Game. You should. There's a lot of people that would appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Let's go ahead and fire up. Next caller, we've got Graham on the line. Hello, Graham. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hello?
Hi. Hey, we're here. What's up, man? No problem.
Sorry, just muted the stream. Anyway, I've got one specific question just about analyzing replays. I've been playing since beta, but recently I've been trying to get a little bit better. And I'm kind of stuck in Diamond, so to try to help this, I've been trying to, you know, watch my own replays and analyze my play. But since, like, I've watched a whole bunch of streams, everybody's streams, and I watch very specifically, but tend to get overwhelmed looking at all the mistakes I make. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you guys had any tips for, like, focusing in on watching replays and specifically what to focus on.
Define overwhelmed by mistakes.
Well, okay, so I'm in, like, a lowish, midish diamond area. So, you know, oftentimes I'll get supply blocked, and so I write down, you know, like, at, you know, 80-somewhat supply is a really bad time for me. So, you know, try not to get supply blocked around then. But at the same time, you know, I have either bad unit positioning or I forget to hotkey units. Just, like, a whole bunch of little things that sometimes crop up, sometimes don't. So I was just wondering if you had any specific strategies. I'm not sure the specific word, but...
Iron out the kinks, to speak?
Iron out the kinks. And to do it consistently.
Well, for the first one that you mentioned, for supply, for me personally, it's tough for me to keep up in the late game. So instead of, like, the way you mentioned it, you were like, okay, around 80 supply, I get stuck here. For me, that shit doesn't work. I can tell myself that I'll get stuck at 40, 60, 80 supply throughout the game. For me, it's more like, all right, I've added 3 more production facilities. I'm at the mid to late game. I need to start producing 2 to 3 supply depots at the same time so that I don't even have to worry about it. I'm not thinking of, like, timings and things like that. So it just scales with my production. As far as other minor stuff, have you tried isolating those specific things and then training based around that? Like, if it's a micro error, just practicing that specific micro scenario, or?
Yeah. That's kind of what I've been trying to do, except often when I find that I focus on one thing very, like, extremely, so I've gotten better, actually, at not getting supply blocked. But then as a consequence, sometimes my micro and hotkey and all that stuff falls by the wayside. So it seems like for every one mistake I fix, two others pop up. So just, I was wondering if you had any...
I mean, from one perspective, you can't expect to fix everything at once, right?
Well, that's also just part of getting better, right? Every time you fix something, you find two other things.
Yeah, every time you change, you've got to, like, understand that, hey, I'm changing to this. Like, even if it's a new strategy, you know, it might be a better strategy overall, but you might do it, like, inferior to, like, other people. So, like, every time you do change, like, it's normal that things go wrong. If I had anything to recommend, it would just be playing quite a bit more than it sounds like you are. Like, you might be playing shit tons for all I know, but just playing a lot and making stuff a habit rather than, like, looking at a number and saying, like, okay, at this number I need to fix things. I'd say building a depot, like, every 20 or 30 seconds, like, a habit rather than looking at times and saying, okay, this is the time when I need to do something, since in every game you'll play, like, not one game's going to be the same. So I just recommend playing a lot more and making things a habit and just, okay, this feels right, I'm going to do it now, bam. Like, not being a time to do it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Do you have any comments?
No.
Good.
Yes.
Oh.
I wouldn't get too tied up in replay analysis. Like, if you ever watch, trying to think of the pros that are really good about that. I know Huck watches a lot of his replays. I think I've seen TLO do it quite frequently, White Raw, Damaga. They don't spend 25 minutes watching the replay and going over every nuance. And, of course, there's a question of knowledge base here, and I would assume that they probably have a little bit more than you. I don't mean that in any kind of condescending way.
They do.
But don't spend too much time on it. Like, look through it, kind of watch the point of impact. You should have a fairly good idea of, like, okay, I didn't have a full concave here. My money spiked up. I'm supply blocked. These would be things that would take away from the effectiveness of any engagement. So you kind of identify that those happen, and then you go into the next game saying, I'm not going to get supply blocked. I'm going to babysit my army and do a little bit more of a concave. So you kind of give yourself, like, a little 2-3 task checklist, if you will. And the important part here, to borrow from DeMuslim's point, is it's not just replay analysis. It's the partnership between replay analysis and then your following game. As long as you can kind of create a coherency between the two and you're building towards a progress, you're going to be a better player for it. There's no one player who played 5 games and then replay analyzed those games 30 times each and then got better, right? It does go hand in hand with playing. It's just a good idea to watch the games you lose so you can find the mistakes so that your future games will be better.
Cool.
That help a little bit?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Thanks for your call, dude.
Wait.
Take care.
Can I do a dramatic reading for you?
Wait? Yes, please do a dramatic reading.
Rapture has a reply for you. Are you ready?
Okay.
We completely missed my point and went off on a completely pointless rant. My point was this. We should not be celebrating 9th place finishes. I was going to ask if we've become too content with losing to Koreans instead of using the 9th place finish to push harder. I see so many people say, oh, he lost to a Korean, so it's okay. And I was going to ask if that's really okay. Instead of having an answer, I was insulted by both Wheat and In Control. I have no idea how they went wrong. I was never passive aggressive and did nothing but support the Muslim and the players. I got, well, what did you place, huh? And, oh, you're on Reddit. I can't believe this is professional, in quotes. I would never have expected to call in and be insulted over an honest point. And it wasn't written, but what is actually, like, in context here, he has unfollowed you from Twitter. He will not be watching any more One More Game TV shows.
Okay.
And DJ Wheat, he's lost respect for you.
He has? All right. Yeah.
Should just start real.
I don't know so, what to say, you know.
One of the things I'd want to take away from this is just how wrong Pain User was again. Can we draw a little bit of attention to that? Pain User thinking this guy had, like, a really valid point about, like, how players are fine and she gets celebrated more, and it was the opposite. Be talking about,
you know, what I fucking hate more than anything else, you guys? I hate guys that, like, completely just dismiss the shit that they say and then try to fucking turn it on us, you know, like, represent us that way. Because you, sir, made several comments that were passive-aggressive right off of the bat. including not only calling out the Muslim and talk, but say dedicating an entire show in a sort of facetious type manner. So here is my suggestion to you. If you don't want to be treated this way, then have a possibly more sensitive approach to it. Because we've had guys call in and ask the same question before in a very educational, intelligent, and non-facetious way.
100% agree.
That's all I got to say about it. I don't need to say anything else. I don't care to defend myself over what is professional and what is not, because you can take a look at anything that any of these people on this panel have done or anything that I have done. And if you want to base everything off of a fucking phone call, then great. Just ignore everything else. Just put the blinders on. You might have had a great point, man. Just don't. You just came about it all wrong. Sorry.
TLDR. If you're going to call a fucking talk show with the Muslim on the show and you're going to ask him a specific question or address him, and then you're going to ask him what place he finished in the fucking tournament the weekend prior, Google.com, dude.
Well, that's
helpful.
Part, that's where Wheat's that's part of where Wheat says passive aggressive. Like, if I'm on the basket, if like, okay, if there's like, I don't know, it's going to be a bad analogy, but like, if you have like an athlete and you ever ask them when they didn't win or place like really, really high, and they go, what place did you finish? And they're like, I don't know, like 9th or 10th. They'll be like, okay. So my point is, we shouldn't be celebrating. Like, and it was like a standalone thing. That's as passive aggressive as it fucking gets. Like, I it's so funny to see how many people in the stream chat are like oblivious to this. Did you never play sports in your life? Like, that's one of the ways you talk shit in sports, where you're standing across from the team like you, like the year before, did shittiest crap. You go like, what place did you guys place last year? That's saying fuck you. Like, I'm not saying he took it or he meant it that harshly, but that's...
I don't, and you know what, he probably didn't. But here we had a great little life lesson today, didn't we, guys?
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what. I'll just leave it at that. Great little life lesson.
Five minutes of my life that
there
I'm never going to get back.
Exactly. I want it back. So we're going to take a couple more callers. This one is bound to be good. Or I'll take one more before Goat Lust. How about that?
There we go.
All right. I'm going to take Bobby. All right. Hello, Bobby. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Bobby
hello, Boucher.
Yeah. Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to Inside
Not a whole
the game.
Lot.
What's going on?
Am I live?
You are live.
You are
sir.
Live, Keith.
Oh, okay. I just had one question to ask.
Sure.
Do you guys know when Dota 2 is coming out?
What the fuck?
Yep. My good buddy Rapture knows. Just go ahead and talk to him a little bit.
At least be funny when you troll. Come on.
I don't know. Maybe I missed context, you know? Maybe I...
Okay. Maybe next life lesson for everyone on the internet. When you troll an internet-based show... You cannot open up with, I just have one question, because it's like 9 times out of 10.
Right, because at that point they're thinking for a moment like, maybe this is a really bad idea. And by the way, I would just like to say, on a scale of 1 to 10, EG, Epileptic Gaming, had callers that ranked a fucking 15. You guys fucking suck. You are like negative fucking trolls. I can't even believe. I thought that... Man, I read Reddit and I read like the greatest stuff, but apparently, man, I've got to bring Epileptic Gaming back, dude. So at least I can get some good troll callers. Fuck.
Yes. I have often thought that my talents were wasted being on the shows and not actually just prank phone calls.
You should. Sorry. That's from now on. I think I'll just quit and do that full time. Oh, wait, there are no other shows that you could. Okay.
Oh, shit.
That's right. We're going to take another caller. We got Chris on the line. Hello, Chris. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. First off, congratulations to the Muslim.
Thank you very much.
Second, congrats, dude. Good work.
Thanks. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
My question is that, well, I first of all wanted to state out that GSTL Finals will be at IPL4. I don't know if you heard. That was a little announced about an hour ago. What do you guys think about that, having the GSTL Finals be at in Las Vegas?
this was announced just literally like minutes ago.
Literally,
right?
Like an hour ago.
Yeah, or an hour ago. Right. What do you guys think? I mean, it's kind of akin to BlizzCon did the GSL finals at the end of it. It was probably the most humans I've seen in North America at a single event at any given time. Will it have potentially a similar effect? I think that's the big question. What do you guys think?
I'm thrilled. I love the, like, I'm really excited for the people that get to go to an IPL and have a Korean event brought to them. It's so alienating to have, like, there's so many people whose dream is to see Korean players play or see, like, a GSL event, and they can't do it because how expensive and how time-consuming is it to travel to Korea to see an event live. This is yet another opportunity to have it brought here to us. I mean, the past examples would be BlizzCon doing the GSL finals, I believe. Or was it like it was the GSL finals or was the BlizzCon something? Anyways, it was Korean players playing in the finals. I'm really excited about it. I think it's an amazing idea. And hats off to IPL for this initiative. And I hope we see more of this.
Demo, pain user?
I mean, I've known about this for a while, but I think it's awesome. I'm super excited about it. I know everybody at IPL is super excited about it. So hopefully the community is as excited about it as we are.
I think it's – I mean, I like to see that stuff happen on foreign soil because I think it really shows a maturity of and the global status that StarCraft has reached. Because, I mean, before then, it's like you'd never in a million years see a Brood War match like of that caliber. They'd never be like, let's put the Star League in, you know, some Vegas. It just – it would never happen, right? Because – they could never get their core audience over there. Well, it's like now there is a global core audience. So doing it in Europe, in the United States, like it makes sense. And it might be better for them anyway based off of how, you know, I mean, GSL is technically accessible in Korea all times. So why not make it special? I think that's pretty amazing. So, Chris, let me ask you, if you were on the fence about, like, IPL going, would something like GSTL being there definitely, like, push you over and be like, it's an event I can't miss?
Well, if I lived in Las Vegas, of course, I would definitely be going. But, yeah, I would definitely go if I lived there.
Excellent. All right. Thank you for your call, sir. Appreciate it. And take care.
Have a good night.
All right. Have a good night.
Vegas, though. Awesome.
Vegas, baby.
I know, right?
Yeah. Sorry. I won't
tested
there,
the waters a little bit with Atlantic City. I think Vegas is a much more central location. Also, 18 plus. Very nice.
You won't be there, Wheat?
I won't be there.
Where are you going to be?
I'll be at PAX, unfortunately. But not unfortunately. PAX will be awesome, too.
I'm not going to get to cast with you, dude.
I know, man. I know. Kind of wish I could just, you know, clone myself. Be awesome. Get a lot more work done.
I wouldn't settle for DJ Wheat's clone.
I'd have one clone that I would, like, when I was just at home, I would put him in that room, and I'd just, like, make him, like, work out and stuff, and then I would send him after all the guys that I don't like, and then I would just keep doing what I normally do.
I thought you were going to end that sentence completely differently.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, where are you going with that, Wheat?
It's like public.
All right.
You know, that one with the great body, just like I would live out all.